Supreme Court of the State of Wisconsin is now in session. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. We are here for a rules hearing. We have two before us. The first is that we'll deal with is 0703 in the matter of the proposed amendment to the CompuStat Rule 809-19 relating to briefs and appendices. And the presenter is Margaret Carlson, Chief Staff Attorney, Court of Appeals. Are there any other appearances scheduled? All right. You got the microphone, Ms. Carlson.
Thank you, Chief. Court, I'm speaking on behalf of the Court of Appeals. As you know, the petition was filed by then-Chief Judge Kane. I think it's safe to say it's I'm speaking today on behalf of Chief Judge Brown and in support of the petition. What I'd like to do is go through the petition, highlight some of the major changes, and then also I have received the responses that were filed, I believe, by the appellate practice section and the Attorney Greg Weber on behalf of the Attorney General's office, and I can speak to those as they're pertinent to my comments, if that's acceptable.
Yes. But, you know, these are pretty simple changes.
I would hope.
I was surprised at the comments, which I thought, well, good. So why don't you, if you have potential suggestions for amendments that you're going to put in?
I do. I have a couple.
Okay, why don't you give them to us,
okay.
I think.
One area that, since the petition was filed, in speaking with additional people, probably the most substantive change to the content requirement is the addition of an obligation on the appellant in the context of administrative decisions to include in the appendix the findings of fact, conclusions, and decision of the agency. Obviously, the reason for that is that in the appellate context, the court is reviewing the agency and not the circuit court. So in that kind of a case, the circuit court decision is not essential to appellate review. As the petition is drafted, it refers to a Section 227.52 judicial review of an administrative decision. I believe that the LRB's comments removed the .52 and broadened it just to Chapter 227. That would be fine with the court. But in addition to that, it appears that there are...
That's because the LRB doesn't like cross-references, because if they change, then you got to change all the cross-references.
And they're betting on Chapter 227 not changing it.
Okay.
But actually, in addition to that, it's come to my attention that... workers' comp reviews actually not handled
under
Chapter 227,
right.
And that's 102,
right.
And also unemployment compensation.
So do you want to just take
I would take
everything
out the statutory reference,
right,
entirely.
Okay. If the appeal is taken from a circuit court order or judgment entered in a judicial review of an administrative decision, that will cover it and cover a workers' comp. Okay. Now, the other question was that sometimes there aren't findings of fact, conclusions of law, according to the AG.
Right.
And I assume that he would want you to put in comma, if any comma.
That is what Attorney Weber said, and the court, I don't see any problem
okay,
with
but
that.
He'd also put in, if I read him right, and the final decision of the administrative agency. Just in case it's different, because
that's
sometimes
fine.
The hearing,
right,
examiner's one, got the agency.
That's correct. Those
okay.
Were...
So you're willing to do that?
Certainly.
You're very accommodating, Ms. Carlson.
I know that I'm speaking to the court.
Okay. All right.
I might be less accommodating on the next matter, because I think the State Bar misapprehends what the proposal says.
Okay. Let's So have you taken care of now the Department of Justice? According to my notes, you have. No, not quite. The Department of Justice's comments, are they finished?
Well, they also speak to the respondent certification matter.
Right. Do you want to talk about
that? Well, actually, in that matter, that part of the petition actually has its genesis in conversations and discussions between the court and the Department of Justice, going back to when the certification requirement was first instituted in effective January 1, 06, the clerk's office started receiving calls from the Attorney General's office concerned that the certification language, going back that when they filed as a respondent a supplemental appendix, they were obliged under the rules to file a certification, and the statutory language makes the certification language mandatory. The material they were including in their supplemental appendix did not match the certification, so they were very concerned that they were filing false certifications, or that they would have to be filing false certifications. So that started discussion between the Attorney General's office and the court. The judges discussed it at a judges' meeting, and the court's response was to include the language in the petition, which basically makes the obligates the respondent to use the certification substantially similar. Basically, you don't have to use the statutory language, but use that as a model and then certify that your supplemental appendix complies with that. Now, as I read the State Bar's response, they seem to read the proposal as obligating a respondent to fill in the blanks for an appellant who has not given the court the material that the court would like. That is not the court's intent, and frankly, that was discussed in conversations between the court and the Attorney General's office, and there was a period of time when the Court of Appeals was certainly thinking seriously about asking that to be put in the rule, and the Attorney General Department of Justice pointed out some flaws in that proposal, and the court changed their mind and went down this route. So I frankly don't read the petition as obligating a respondent to fill in the blanks and provide the material that the appellant did not. Arguably, however, since the appellate practice section being composed of, we would think, some of the better appellate practitioners in the state, if they read the rule that way, there clearly is some ambiguity that the court did not intend. So, frankly, I think Ms. Janicek had a couple proposed modifications. The second of the two, I think, is closer to what the court...
That is, the respondent may file with his or her brief a supplemental appendix. And then it just goes on to say if the record is to be confidential, you go into must comply with confidentiality. Any supplemental appendix shall include a table of contents and a signed certification. The appendix complies with confidential requirements of 2A in a form substantially similar to the confidentiality provision in 2B. Is that what you're talking about?
The one that's on the bottom of the second page and extends over to
the third. That's the one I read. Okay. Right. And that would substitute where in your petition?
Right.
My comment to that is that that's redundant to what the rules already require, because under 809.10.2b, a cross appellant has the same rights and obligations as an appellant. So the rules already put an obligation on a cross appellant to comply with the same appendix rules.
But what
that said, this is not, it's not inconsistent with current practice. It's not inconsistent with anything. So if it, in the interest of clarity, so that a cross appellant knows up front their obligations in the context of appendix, I don't see anything incorrect about the proposal.
Well, you have in 3B, it's a four-liner as I read it. The respondent may file with his or her brief a supplemental appendix in conformity with sub 2. certification as to content of the supplemental appendix in a form substantially similar to 2B shall be appended to a supplemental appendix. Now, is that what we're talking about?
Oh, I thought you were moving on to the second part of the State Bar's response about cross-appellants.
Well, we haven't gotten to cross-appellants. We're still with the respondent. The respondent is 3B.
Okay.
I'm just trying to make sure that I know what you're talking about.
Sorry, I misunderstood where we were going.
All right. So what does 3B as the State Bar has it? And that's a substitute for your 3B relating to respondent's brief. Is that right?
Okay, that's on the second one. That I believe their second suggestion is substantially equivalent to what the court...
So you're willing to just substitute that?
Correct.
Okay. It's a little longer.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Now, I have another question for you. On the certification of the appellant, right? You have to change the language. I further certify that if this appeal is taken from a circuit court order, a judgment entered in A, and you have to eliminate the statutory reference.
Correct. Right. Whatever changes are made to the contents part of it,
right.
A corollary change
right.
should be made to the certification
Right. So it
language.
Would read in the final thing, and final decision of the administrative, you'd have to put in the appendix contain findings by conclusions of law to make it consistent and final decision, if any, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Where is that?
You'd have to match up the certification with how we change the Appendix A contents.
Got it.
And that covers also if the court deletes the relevant trial court entries, inserts the word... at a minimum, and I believe LRB wanted all of the following. They suggested that.
And does the AG's office have any objection as to the respondent's certification?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know. If you're talking about the State Bar's response, I don't know. They certainly did not have any objection to the language in the petition, since it was more or less a joint petition arose out of discussions with the court, and I think I read Attorney Weber's letter as saying he supported it.
They have a suggestion about the respondent, too, on page 2, that they being the AG's office. I'm just trying to get so we have one thing in front of the court that the court can look at.
Department of Justice.
Department of Justice on page 2, the bottom. In an effort to address their concerns as respondent, they're suggesting a certification for respondent's supplemental appendices. They suggest the following format. I hereby certify that filed with this brief, either as a separate document or part of the brief, is a supplemental appendix that complies with the contents requirements.
Excuse me, which document? I don't think I have whatever document you're reading from.
January.
I'd like to approach the bench. It's September 13, 2007, Department of Justice letter to Clerk of Court David Shanker.
I have something that's only a one-page document of that date, and the second page is simply his signature.
I think the chief is reading from page 2 of the January 10th, 2006 letter.
Yep, filed here.
That's a different...
Right.
That letter, I believe, was sent from... That was an early...
So that's off the table?
Correct.
Okay. Off the table.
Well, let me just ask, why is it off the table when it was so recently sent to the court on September 13th? It doesn't sound like
there are two different... The September 13th letter that I have is simply a two-page letter. Did he attach... Excuse me. He attached the January 10th letter
to his September 13th. He does write, in my opinion, the proposed changes, and I just want to make sure that we're dealing with what he views as the proposed changes, address the principal concerns I raised in my letter to Kane. So that's...
I can't speak for Attorney Weber, but it's certainly my impression, and also judging from his September 13th letter, that the concerns that he addressed to the court in the January 10th, 2006 letter were taken care of and are no longer on the table.
All right. So we're only dealing, we've taken care of the Department of Justice's concerns so far.
I believe so.
All right. Now, and we're taking care of the bar up to 3B, right?
I believe that their second proposal is...
Okay. Now we're talking, are we up to cross-appellants?
Now we can talk about cross-appellants that I already talked about when I... It's actually quite difficult. This is the first time I've had a difficulty hearing with the echo, so I apologize for jumping ahead earlier. The bar proposal proposes the creation of 6F that will put the cross-appellant's appendix obligations right there. As I said earlier, I don't think it's necessary. I think that under the general rule in 809.10.2b that puts a cross-appellant in the same position as an appellant throughout the process, I don't think that's essential, but I also don't see any harm in putting it up front in the cross-appellant section of the brief. It might be easier for cross-appellants then to find if they have any questions about their appendix.
You're willing to accept that in 6F? And the language is adequate?
I believe so.
Okay. And the numbering is okay as I read it.
I think the last one I looked, the 6E was the last one that was available.
Okay.
So unless the LRB wants you to go to 6P or something.
No. All right. Now, is there somewhere in the rules that has a general statement on the appendix that says the appendix is really designed because the court doesn't get, each member of the court doesn't get a copy of the record, that the appendix is designed to enable the judge to deal with the case without having to consult the record at the initial reading, something like that.
There's something in the rules to that effect? No. I think that that's implicit in the requirement of an appendix to have it easily at the judge's
I think it might
disposal. I think that's being made clear in some case law that's come out recently where the court has taken the occasion in a published case to emphasize the importance of the appendix and what particularly the circuit court oral and written decisions.
I think it should be something in the rules.
I can't see that would be a detriment.
But stated positively would be a help.
Certainly. When you go back to one of the things, motivations that, you know, speaking to the Judicial Council appellate practice, one of our motivations in that committee in revising the rules is always to get everything, the most information as possible in Chapter 809 where people start and get some cross-references. So under that motivation and under that theory, an introductory statement would be perhaps useful.
All right.
I'm certain that the clerk could come up with some language or, the court in the drafting, if you want me to offer some language on behalf of the court, I could do that.
Okay.
Is that?
Right. Now, I think we've got the petition as amended before us,
yeah,
or as suggested amendments. Carry on, please. Do you have anything else you want to say?
No. I, Does the court want me to come up with some language, or
let's see what
propose some language?
We can wait on that. Let's see if there are other questions or comments. Okay, Ms. Carlson.
Thank you.
Thank you for your work on this. At the court, I'm sorry. The court understands, of course, that this only refers to the Court of Appeals appendices, not the Supreme Court. Okay, Justice Prosser.
Did you say that we had here the petition as amended?
Well, as amended here by Ms. Carlson saying that she accepts the Department of Justice, if any, findings of fact and conclusions of law, that she accepts eliminating Section 227.52 in this, that the certification should then comply with the appendix context by adding the words, if any, and that as to the respondent's supplemental appendix, you would take the state bars 3B.
There's second.
And that you would take 6F from the state bars suggestion as to cross appellants.
That's correct.
And that's what I mean by amendment here, that she thinks that these are
consistent with the petition and the Court of Appeals intent in the entire proposal.
Good. And the Court of Appeals accepts them as such, and therefore...
To the extent that I can speak for the court.
Well, that's
you?
A little shaken. Okay.
In this context, very limited context.
All right. Okay.
Anything else?
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to be heard? Hearing and seeing none, the hearing, public hearing on 0703 in the matter of the proposed amendment to Westat Rule 809-19 is closed. We now move to 0705 in the matter of the amendment of Supreme Court Rule 3209 regarding continuing education for the Wisconsin judiciary. The presenter is the Director of State Courts, John Velker. Is there anyone else who's going to appear on this? Okay. Mr. Velker.
Well, thank you. This is really in the interest of clarity. I think it's very straightforward. Petition as a result. I don't think it'll take me much more than an hour to get through the details of it.
Well, you have an hour and a half, so we're very happy.
Okay. Actually, if you look at Supreme Court Rule 32 dealing with judicial education, there are three specific requirements within that rule. One requirement is that a judge is required to have 60 credits in 6 years. That's 3202. There's a requirement that they attend the judicial college, criminal law, and sentencing in the prison tour. That's 3204. There's also a minimum and maximum of in-state education, which is 3205. Now, both 3204 and 3205 are cited in the non-compliance section of the rule, which is 3209, but is silent on 3202. This rule change makes it clear that there are sanctions, or if you don't comply with the 60 credits in 6 years, the same sanctions as the other requirements come into play. That is not clear in the way that it's written. However, that has been the way we have implemented this rule for years. So to take the ambiguity out of this, this is really a technical amendment to make that clear.
As far as I know, there are no pending matters relating to this. I mean, no one has violated this rule, so this clarification doesn't affect anyone. As far as I can remember on this committee, we have not had anyone who has gotten to this stage of noncompliance. So, but it is a matter of clarification. Okay. I do have a question, as you might have expected. I looked, no one has said anything on this, if I'm right. No one has filed anything.
I do have a September 26th letter come from the State Bar supporting this change.
Okay. Robert Nelson, senior legislative attorney at the Legislative References, made some suggestions. I'm not sure I agree with his suggestions to delete subsection 2, and maybe you or Mr. Haas would like to comment. I think he is absolutely right that there's no order. But I think what the language should be, after the period of the extension has passed and the judge has not complied with the extension, the director of judicial education shall refer the violation to the committee for a hearing, send the judge a notice of the hearing. And then if the committee finds the judge hasn't complied with the chapter, it refers the matter to the Supreme Court for action.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, otherwise, I think a step is missed. So I would keep in sub 2, I think.
I agree.
But I would just put in, instead of order extension, I think he's absolutely right. I mean, when I read it, I didn't see any problem because I read the judicial committee really putting out an order. But if you fix it up so it's extension, I think it's all right. Anyway, would you take that up with Dave Haas and with Mr. Nelson? And if he agrees, can we keep that in?
Yep, we can do that.
Unless somebody on the court thinks we ought to eliminate that. Are there any comments on the court?
John, as you were reading 3204, or referring to 3204, first of all, 32.001, a judge means a justice of the Supreme Court, as well as others.
Mm-hmm.
Are justices required to comply with 3204?
Yes.
Right. No, not the criminal law, sentencing, not the prison.
Last sentence, I'm sorry, does not apply to appellate judges.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Of course, right in front of me. I'm sorry.
No, and I think that that this doesn't change that. The requirements remain the same. The only thing this does is make sure that the failure to comply with the 60 points, 60 credit hours, is treated in the same way as failure to comply with other required continuing education matters. But if you're not required, then obviously failure to do so does not bring you into a non-compliance. So I think it fits, but I'm...
If this rule does not apply to appellate judges, does that mean that we are not required to attend the prison tour either?
No, that is a separate...
You're not required.
No, you're not required to do the prison tour. That's right. That's part of that section.
You've been very nice in attending, mm-hmm. Dave. And I'm sorry that we're telling you this now.
For law and sentencing, if you were looking to sign up.
Right, but you may go, and many do, on a voluntary basis. Maybe we should be required, Dave, but we're not. Just like we're not. It used to be we required to go to the judicial college, but that was eliminated too several years ago. Any other questions? Hearing none. Do you have any other comments you want to make?
Nope. Under promise and over deliver. I'm just under an hour, so we're good.
Okay. My only comment is just to check on keeping sub 2, but making that change.
I agree.
I don't think it's a big deal either way, but it does fill in the blank. Okay. There are no other comments by anyone on the court. And there are no other appearances. The hearing on 0705 in the matter of the amendment of Supreme Court Rules 3209 is closed. Mr. Velker, just one comment. I had originally scheduled a e-filing signature and matter. And that was postponed from the spring, and you asked that it be postponed today, which is fine. And I gather that's being done for the waiting for the what happens at the budget.
Correct.
Okay. So we will not hear that. We obviously won't hear it today, and we won't decide it without having first heard it. So that's off the agenda. There's nothing else to come before our open rules hearing. So the open rules hearing is now adjourned. Within a few moments, the court will be back sitting in open administrative conference and will, I hope, decide 07-03 and 07-05. We are adjourned.